coming up on podcast 1100, happy birthday to you, Tesla Giga Berlin. It's won, but is it ready? Let's find out. Stick around. On the podcast today, so much brilliant EV news. Got investment in EV batteries, got LG Chem supplying a new type of cell to Tesla, got e-bike news as well. Well, good morning, good afternoon, or good evening, wherever you're listening around the world. Welcome to EV News Daily. It's Tuesday, 1st of June, pinch punch and all that. My name is Martin Lee, and I go through every EV story so you don't have to. Looking ahead to tomorrow, by the way, we have a very special show, which is our first look at the Rimac C_2, which has a name, and it's ready. It's the Rimac Nevera. And on tomorrow's show, all of the reviews hit the internet today, the first drives, the write-ups, the embargo was lifted. Check out the special show tomorrow looking at that, the fastest accelerating production car in the world. And yes, of course, it's a full EV. First, though, we'll start with California's regulator adopting a new EV mandate for working vehicles, the likes of Uber and Lyft, ride-hailing fleets. Now, we've had Lyft on this podcast before. They were brilliant, really open, really honest, told us a lot about their EV plans and the challenges they've got as well. Like, EVs are expensive and some of their drivers can't afford them. And the things they're doing to help them and to get them to EVs by 2030. California's clean air regulator has just adopted rules, though, to mandate that nearly all of the trips on Uber and Lyft and any ride-hailing platform has to be pure electric by the end of the decade, a first such regulation by any US state, says a Reuters report. Now, Uber and Lyft said they supported the regulations, but called for more government aid to help lower and middle-income drivers with the costs for their transition. And that would echo what they said to me on a Saturday special interview show we did a few weeks ago now. If you like it, you can check out, want to hear it, you can check out the blog ev.news or evnewsdaily.com, little search box, just type Lyft, and you can hear that interview we did with them. Now, the rules, adopted through a unanimous vote by the California Air Resources Board, mandate that EVs account for 90% of ride-hailing vehicle miles travelled by 2030. Uber and Lyft have partnerships with rental companies and charging station providers, all helping to lower the cost of their drivers to get into an EV. Uber has also said it will invest $800 million through 2025, helping drivers globally switching to EVs. But you can't escape the fact that the purchase price, the outright cost, some of the lease deals as well can be more expensive, but they are coming down. We've seen lease deals be even cheaper than the equivalent piston car, for instance, in some places. I've seen a couple, I saw a Peugeot one here last month where the E208, the electric car, was even cheaper than the combustion car. So, look, there's lots of work to be done, but Uber and Lyft saying we support it, just need some help. And no, that's understandable. The thing is, they're working vehicles. You know, I get stupidly excited about vehicles that do miles, not necessarily private cars. Like, I love talking about the cars that you and I are going to buy and have in our driveways, but I get more excited about working vehicles going electric because, you know, some cars don't come off the road, right? Some are working 24 hours a day, some work 18 or 20 hours a day with a couple of shifts and two drivers sharing a car. And to get that away from emissions and to electric makes a much bigger difference than me that's done about 20 miles in the last week. Okay, moving on. Tesla, Giga Berlin, happy birthday to you. Blow out your candle on the cake because you're one. It's been quite a ride for Tesla at Giga Berlin. The project near Berlin, they call it Giga Berlin, but it's a long way out of Berlin. First, the company had to prepare the site. Then it started that work in about mid-Feb last year. Then, of course, COVID. The actual construction work under initial partial permits started in May 2020. At the end of May, actually. It's been a year, exactly, since proper construction started, says Inside EVs. And unlike the first phase of Giga Shanghai in China, which produced the first cars within, well, less than a year, actually, it was a year to the day from groundbreaking with that photo opportunity with Mr. Musk and his Chinese management and some officials on that stage, where the handover ceremony to the first cars, the first Model 3s, that famous Elon Musk dad dancing on the stage, that one where he threw his suit jacket off. That was exactly a year to the day after groundbreaking. Incredible. And there was this kind of friendly rivalry. I'd see it on the blogs and on Tesla Twitter, talking about, well, you know, can Berlin go better? Can it beat China? And I see people say, oh, no, Europe's full of regulations. You can't get anything done. It's going to take 10 years. Well, look, somewhere in that is probably the balance of it was never going to be as quick as China when you think about what they're doing there, which is to build all of the battery facilities now from day one, but also all the Model Y facilities. And of course, the Model Ys are going to come with the 4680 cells. That's the bigger battery cells. So look, anyway, unlike the first phase of Giga Shanghai, it has taken long. The good news is that work is at a really advanced stage at Berlin. Buildings and infrastructure still need to be completed. Then the company has to put the installation of the production equipment in. So actual vehicles rolling off the production line might not be that much sooner than Austin, which started so much later. That looks incredible. That's a different story, though. A Tesla Model Y for Europe will be by the end of the year on sale. The 4680 cells initially will come from the pilot line in California, and then eventually they'll make them here in Europe. That is important for Tesla to get back to growth. Tesla's in decline here in Europe because of increased competition. So actually, their numbers are fine. They're just not really growing compared to the competition, so their market share is going down. Their slice of the pie is getting much, much smaller because there's so much more choice in the last 12 to 18 months of electric vehicles. So not a massive problem for Tesla, but I'm sure they'd like their share to be higher. Went up a little bit recently, bit of a recovery. And also because it's so dependent on shipping around the world. And that's what nobody wants. Nobody wants to be driving a car with zero emissions and know that it was on a massive ship halfway around the world, either from Fremont or from China, using bunker fuel and horrible emissions coming out of those ships. You would like it, actually, you know, if you can make it in Germany, get it on a train, get it around the continent, then that's so much better than shipping. So let's hope that's done as soon as possible. I can't wait, you know, because I would love a right-hand drive Model Y. That would probably be the car that I would have at this stage of my life, with some family stuff to put in the back and pushchairs and baby seats and things like that. I've never owned a Tesla. So actually, I think the next EV will be great to do a bit of exploring on the supercharging network. Maybe we can take some European trips. There's a bit more paperwork involved now. We're no longer in Europe here in the UK. But I just can't get one. I mean, I can't get a Model Y at all in the UK. But I'd like the new battery, new production technique Model Y. But when they make right-hand drive versions of that from Berlin, it could be a year away, if not more. Anyway, fingers crossed that those vehicles start coming as soon as possible. Coming up on the podcast today, we're going to be talking about how EV investment in battery technology is increasing, particularly from a company that's not really making EVs yet, and how LG Chem are going to supply a new type of battery to Tesla. They could well be the first to use that. Stick around. First of all, we're going to talk about Belgium. And for those that maybe aren't, I don't know, fully aware of the geography, France, go up a bit, Germany, go left a bit. And actually, from where I used to live in London, just get in a boat and go down the Thames a bit and you end up in Belgium, if you're lucky not to hit the Netherlands. Anyway, Belgium government has been given the green light to a finance minister bill which accelerates electric company cars in the country, and this is important. At the same time, the planned ban on internal combustion engines is off the table, though. But tax advantages are now only available if they are pure electric, according to electrive.com. The planned cornerstones, which still have yet to be implemented, what the heck? Come on, brain and mouth, please communicate. Implemented in the necessary legislation are, there's a few actually, from 2026, only zero emission company cars will benefit from any kind of tax advantage. New electric cars are going to be 100% tax deductible from the middle of the decade, and the tax deductibility will gradually decrease all the way through to 2031 as well. These are long-term plans, and it's really worked in the UK as well, because company car tax, it's a thing called benefit in kind in this country. In other words, if you get a benefit, whether it's healthcare, we don't need it because we have a national healthcare system that's free, but we pay for it, don't get me wrong, but we don't have private healthcare here, you don't have to have it, but if you get a benefit from your job, like a company car, you get taxed on it, and that is, for EVs, has been 0%, and now it's 1% of the book price of the car, which is still incredibly low compared to the rates for the, you know, combustion car equivalents. So company car incentives and taxes has worked here really well. Hopefully it works in Belgium as well. Companies are able to claim the construction of charging Companies can claim the construction of charging stations for electric vehicles against their tax as well. It's a tax write-off. But in order to ensure that they get the tax write-off for that, the facilities, the EV charging facilities, must be accessible to the public when those businesses are closed. So, outside of opening hours, I love that. So, yeah, sure, we'll give you a bunch of tax breaks to put EV charging stations in businesses. Hey, no problem. But when all your staff go home for the day, they've got to be made available to anyone to come along and use. Obviously, you can charge for that, etc., etc. Brilliant. What a great way of thinking about EV infrastructure. I love it. Can everywhere do that, please? Because so many places at the weekend, you know, are closed, car parks are empty, but they've got workplace chargers. Well, actually, if I can go in and, I don't know, work out a way of paying for it, some of them will be free, some of them will need, I don't know, maybe like part of a network or an RFID card or something, that's amazing. Instantly multiplies the amount of chargers that you can use. Okay, moving on. Investment in EV battery industry technology is increasing, and this time we're talking Toyota. Toyota and Nissan are both planning to invest 160 billion yen and 200 billion yen, respectively, to increase their EV battery production capacities. And if you're thinking, hang on, Martin, you're always telling us that Toyota don't have EVs. Well, they don't at the moment, but they say they will one day. The Nikkei reported yesterday that investment from Toyota pertaining to the period of April this year to March next year is 200% of the previous year, according to Business Korea. Now, they also say that the joint subsidiary of Toyota and Panasonic is planning to build more production lines in Hyogo in Japan and Dalian in China. Prime Earth EV is another joint company, and that's going to be increasing production capacity in Japan and China as well. Toyota's capacity for next year will be 5 million units, twice last year. When they say units, I don't know if that means cars or battery packs, because obviously the battery pack in a Toyota, no such thing as a self-charging hybrid, those batteries are teeny-weeny, you can barely see them. But if they're going to be making full EVs, of course, they'll needing bigger packs and then plug-in hybrids somewhere between. So that wasn't clear, but they said it'll be 5 million units next year for battery pack production. I just need to know the detail on that. And, well, what does that mean? It's a nice number, but what's the pack size? More information, please, we need. Talking batteries, and LG Chem will soon supply a new type of cell chemistry to Tesla. It's called the NCMA cell. Currently, LG Chem supplies NCM cells to Tesla in China. But starting next month, there'll be a change, and Tesla in China from LG Chem will get the NCMA chemistry. The Made in China Model Y will become the first production electric car to get this battery, says Pedro at Push EVs. But what does it mean? Well, he explains that previously GM were going to be the first automaker to use this chemistry from LG Chem with the Ultium batteries. The GMC Hummer was with its 800 volt system was going to be using these cell chemistries. However, GM says with its Ultium batteries made with NCMA cells, the kilowatt hour cost at cell level is well below $100 or 82 euros. NCMA cells have higher nickel and lower cobalt content, which makes them cheaper. And the NCMA battery cells are more durable, they're safer, they charge faster, and energy density is the same, maybe a bit higher, actually. So, fantastic to move high-performance EVs to that. Of course, the cheaper, low-performance EVs will use the LFP cells that we've talked loads about, lithium iron phosphate. There's some other technologies as well, fighting for those costs. But those are coming in at about $60 per kilowatt hour at cell level, of course. And even, but what's interesting is this chemistry will be used for higher performance cars, so high performance Model Y, Hummers, things like that, with GM's Ultium cells. But even then, still below $100 per kilowatt hour, a real key benchmark to go beneath. Let's talk about e-bikes, offering an affordable option to reach climate goals. While we commit so much of California's climate funds to EVs, says this blog, it's fair to ask if there are other options. A recent study by the College of Engineering at Portland State University found that subsidies for e-bikes are actually more effective than electric vehicle incentives, more effective at reducing greenhouse gas emissions from private cars over the lifetime of the vehicle. I think they're probably talking about there. The study focused on greenhouse gas impact of subsidies for e-bikes, e-cars and plug-in hybrid cars in Oregon, says calmatter.org. E-bikes plug into regular wall outlets. They cost about a cent per mile to operate. They need for charging stations that are expensive to install. Compared to EVs, e-bikes are carbon crushers, they call them. Investing in biking makes people healthier, happier. It's proven, improves traffic safety and reduces congestion. In the future, we should consider a tax break, says this article, for small businesses purchasing cargo e-bikes. I completely agree, and it's just e-bikes are so expensive. Have you looked? Like, to get one off the shelf that's a brand name, it's thousands and thousands. Now, I've looked at making my own as a project, maybe for a YouTube video or to do it on the podcast, and, like, to get all of the bits pre-COVID was going to cost about £450, huge amount of money. But I'd saved it in my kind of eBay, my searches and or my favourites or whatever. I had a look recently. All those kits are about £600 for the same 1,000-watt systems with the battery, the motor and everything, and the in-hub wheel. And I'm like, hang on, that's like so... Things should get cheaper in the EV world, and that's so much more expensive. And you've got to buy the bike on top of that. And, you know, you're getting a kit from China that you've got to make yourself. And so I completely agree. Look, a really good example. I don't know, can you think of an example in your life where an e-bike would be so good? Like, for me, I popped out and got some supplies for Brekkie earlier on today for tomorrow morning, and I took the car, and it's to our local shop, our local co-op. It's 0.9 miles. I timed it. 0.9 miles took me 3 minutes in the car. Well, 0.9 miles on an e-bike takes about 3 minutes. Maybe five. Do you know what I mean? But by the time that I've got in the car, seatbelt, get ready, get out of my, you know, if the bike is just in the garage or just by the side of the house, you can hop on and go, and the other end as well, I had to wait for a parking space and I could have just locked a bike up outside and ran in, it may have even been quicker. And it's a gorgeous day here today, and I would have enjoyed it and got some fresh air in my lungs. It's crazy that I didn't do that journey on an e-bike. I mean, to walk it, not that much more time. But an e-bike, or even a scooter, which isn't allowed, it's illegal here to ride them on the road, it would have been so perfect. Maybe it's a future question of the week on e-bikes and your thoughts. But your thoughts are welcome anytime. Hello at evnewsdaily.com on the podcast, and I'll read them out. Finally, a story about the global top 20. We're talking about April. Even though it's June today, the data's now in for April. And this is the global data. Registrations are up 249% in April to 392,000 plug-in vehicles. The fourth best month ever in history, with pure battery electric cars jumping 235% to 251,000. We'll call it a quarter of a million. In the month of April alone, a quarter of a million pure battery electric vehicles registered in a month alone globally. It might be best thinking about the bigger picture, and actually the plug-in market could be 5 million this year. According to data from ev-sales.blogspot, go and check it out. I'll pop a link in the show notes if you want to go read the whole blog. Really, really good article, as always, from that team there. These impressive results, they say, this year kept the plug-in vehicle share at 5.7% overall. That's 3.7% for pure battery electrics. I know that's low, but this is global, remember. And it's significantly above last year, which was 4% at this time, and now it's 5.7%. Two new faces in the top five globally. ID4 debuted in fourth place, and also the ID3 making its appearance at number five. When you look at the rundown, the Wuling Mini EV is back in the top spot, taking the top spot once again from Tesla. When you look at Tesla, the Model Y managed to outsell the Model 3 for the first time ever globally. And of course, Tesla don't publish their monthly numbers, so there's a little bit of guesswork involved in here. But also, if it's true, that's huge. That's first time ever that Y would have outsold 3, which, you know, when you think about the things that Elon Musk has said over the years, is probably the way that they expected it to go all along. We were waiting for the crossover point. Did we get it? Very interesting to think about. Hey, question of the week with emobilitynorway.com. What kind of charging do you think workplaces should have? Funnily enough, there's a workplace story on the podcast today. Email me your thoughts and I'll read them out on Sunday. Hello at evnewsdaily.com. Hey, a reminder that everyone on Patreon, we've got some new names to read out as well, by the way, on Patreon, supporting us. Two or three new names, actually, in the last week to read out very soon. And everyone, at whatever level, from $5 upwards, if you want to support the work of this podcast and spreading the good word about EVs and zero emissions. You can do that, whether you want to get the little perks and bonuses or just to support it, that's all good. But you get an ad-free feed. So if you notice the odd ad cropping up, which we do to keep this podcast afloat, you get an ad-free version of the podcast if you check out Patreon and sign up. Premium partners are Phil Roberts of Electric Future, Brad Crosby, Porsche of The Village in Cincinnati, Audi of Cincinnati East, Volvo Cars of Cincinnati East, NationalCarCharging.com and AlohaCharge.com. Derek Riley and his brilliant EV Review Ireland YouTube channel was live either around the time I'm recording or asking how it went, actually. Doing some really good stuff there. Richard at rsev.co.uk for buying and selling EVs in the UK at emobilitynorway.com. Have a good one, see you tomorrow. And remember, there is no such thing as a self-charging hybrid.